Hello and welcome to Creative Weirdos. This is a little show where I talk to old and new friends about all kinds of fun, art, weirdness, and everything in between. If you didn't listen to yesterday's Daily Art episode, I made an announcement that I'll be stopping doing the daily shows for a while to focus on some professional projects and kind of get more into these interviews and some of the other aspects of the podcast that I've really fallen in love with. So check that out if you want details. But for this morning, I have a beautiful conversation with my wonderful friend Ashley Dreyfuss, who has just been a forever inspiration for me. Ashley creates beautiful artwork, and we talk about that as well as all kinds of other weird stuff. And it's just so nice to connect with somebody that I've been talking to online for so long. And yeah, I think you're really going to enjoy this chat. Check out all of Ashley's work linked below. Ashley's shop has beautiful shirts, prints, everything over there. It's all such wonderful eye candy. So go support wonderful artists and people like my friend Ashley and enjoy this conversation. I'll talk to y'all soon. Bye. And I have the wrong time in my head. So I had a little bit of time to work on this comic, and I was trying to draw somebody breathing. And I was like, man, how do you draw breathing? Do you ever get stumped with things like that? Like, do you ever have something you want to draw and you're just like, how do you do this? How do you visually represent this thing that's not like a easy thing to make a symbol for?
That is like a really interesting question. I just think because I have naturally like adapted what movement looks like in my art, and I don't know where it came from or how I figured it out, but I mean, from a very early age when I started drawing, it felt just so natural to know like how an arm bends or how like hair would blow in the wind or like breathing. But it's such a process of just drawing, like constantly practicing and understanding like just how like a human body or just any body would look in that way. But that's also why I draw cartoons, is honestly because I like to make it look a bit silly and kind of out of place.
Yeah, you have a very lush world. I was just saying before we recorded that I feel like your world is very lived in, and we've been following each other for a while now, and I feel like I've seen such a giant progression in your work, but it's all very consistent at the same time. It feels like you've had a very distinct vision from the beginning of it. Has this world, like when you close your eyes, is this what you see? Like, is this the world that you've been living in your whole life, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, I truly feel like I've always lived in a version of this world where like everything is a lot more vibrant than, you know, how you see a natural world. But definitely like when I started developing the characters, my alter egos especially, the world just kind of enveloped around them, like specifically. So I will say that like there's a lot of inspiration that I take from like my everyday life and routine that ends up in a lot of my work, but mostly it all just kind of developed as I kept making more characters and kind of playing around with facial expressions and shapes, especially with like whenever I see buildings and stuff around where I live, I like to take pictures and go back home and sketch things up and again, just like reimagine these things in my own world, and it ends up working really well with everything else that I draw.
No, it's really beautiful. And one of the reasons that I love the way that it comes across is because it has its own, like down to its own perspective that all works. Like it's so, that's my favorite part of cartooning in general, is when someone builds a world where it's not about a real reality, but it's more real because it's all consistent within their reality. And I feel like you accomplished that really well. And one of the things that I've always really resonated with is like almost the, and I don't know if this is putting something, but like, almost like the animistic view of your work. Like, I love how all the trees are alive, and they're as much of a people or a person. They have as much personhood as the alter egos, and like everything seems to be alive in your work. And is that something you've done on purpose or just kind of happened upon?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always been fascinated with putting smiley faces on anything. Like when I was younger, I drew a lot of canvases with Sharpies, especially, which I can delve into at another time. But yeah, I fondly remember drawing this scene of like a ketchup bottle, mustard bottle. There's like a thing of fries sitting on like a diner table, and they all kind of had like mischievous looking faces. I think I was like 12 when I drew that, but I've just always been stoked about kind of giving more liveliness to things that otherwise don't move at all. And of course, like, you know, trees and mushrooms are alive, but we just don't necessarily see that with our plain eyes. So I like to play around with the idea of like magic and creating more mystery to like these otherwise very simple and like everyday things that we walk by every day.
I love that. I think that's super important. Like, it's something that I think if artwork is experienced or kind of interacted with in the right way, then it's just like a magic trick or a spell or a ritual or anything else. It just reminds you how magic this world we live in is, how weird everything really is, and how much better it is to remember that. I see it in my kids. Like, they interact with, like, I've said these stories so many times on this, but, you know, my kid will pick up a rock and be like, this is George. He's 4,000 years old. He has three kids. And like, just give me this whole backstory about a rock he just picked up. And I'm like, yeah, no, you're probably way right. And I forgot how to look at things like that. And it's one of those things that I feel very grateful for. And being a full-time creative is I get to tap into those things and live in that world, that enchanted world more often.
Right. Like, question everything is something that I try to, you know, live by sometimes, especially, yeah, like being a full-time creative, it's like you really have the opportunity to work with anything and turn it into something so much more beautiful than, you know, how the rest of the world might view it, like in a natural way. And yeah, I love like being around little kids, especially. Like, I myself feel like I'm still 12 years old at heart, and I always act on like the feeling of just like being curious and excited about, you know, like visiting new places, you know, walking around the corner of like a building and not knowing like where we're going. But yeah, just curiosity is such an important thing to keep in your heart when you're a creator. And I completely resonate with your son and the story about the rock. Like, I think about stuff like that all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like it allows them to tap into things that we get bad at tapping in. Like, my only like somewhat like paranormal or weird story is all about my kid and our cat that passed. Essentially, he's really got a lot of involvement with ghost cats, which is really fun. Like, he had his first ever imaginary friend was a all black cat that lived under his dresser that he called TD. And we have a cat that's a black and white cat named Dee Dee. And I was like, oh, cool. He's just like pretending like he's got a new cat, lives in his room. And then one day we're talking to our neighbor and she's like telling us about the people that used to live here and all the stuff. And she's like, well, that Tee Dee, he never really liked me. And I was like, who? And she was like, TD. And I was like, who's that? And she was like, that's the guy that owned your house. That was his nickname. Everybody called him that. And I was like, oh, weird. And she was like, you know what happened to him, right? And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, oh, he died in your bathroom upstairs. And like, no one found him for a couple of days or something. And I was like, oh, weird. My kid's room's connected to that. And he talks to an imaginary cat called TD. And like, you know, I was just like, okay, this conversation's done. That was wild. But my kid was never afraid of it. He had a really fun, you know, it doesn't remember it at all now. It was a very positive thing for him. So I was just like, that's cool. This guy, whatever it is, that's it. But I feel like that is the same thing as him talking to that rock and thinking that it is or knowing that it has more personhood. Like, if those things are connected, like being able to have those experiences, you know?
Wow. I mean, that's very crazy that was even remotely a possibility. Just all of those ends connecting, but I believe it. I think
it was wild.
Yeah, especially like, I don't know, kids just know. their intuition is so good. And I think that it's really important for parents to like tap into that and, you know, listen to their kids, especially because they're just so vibrant and like giggly and, you know, are so much more expressive in most ways than, you know, most adults, because a lot of people, you know, tend to suppress those feelings as they get older. And for me, it's like I try to be young all the time, like just think in that mentality, because it is our reality. Like you can be whatever you want to be.
As one of the other things that I have really benefited from, like having kids, as far as having a creative life and all of this stuff, and this is something I talk a lot about on this weird little podcast I do, but it's the like the importance of storytelling and the importance of stories in our lives, and how we really are, like I really feel strongly that, you know, whether it's our inner selves or culture, it's all built on the mythologies and the folklore that we're taking in. And I feel like not to sound too pompous or anything, but I feel like I'm doing my little part in telling new stories that are more positive. And I feel like there's something really, really important about being a creative right now and like kind of trying to direct this weird global narrative and like personal narratives. And I see it with my kids. Like Teddy just started getting into his own pop culture. Like he likes Harry Potter for the first time, and like he's never had nightmares before, but we just read the first book together, and now he wakes up and he's like Voldemort, and he has like these weird nightmares. I'm like, oh shit, it's working. I forgot this stuff is way more powerful than I remembered. It's one of those things that, like, I mean, so many things that are he's taking in for the first time, but it's so interesting to see how important storytelling is and how important. I was telling you before we started recording how into comics I am right now, and that's like what got me back to there, because those were the first stories that like really I feel like my my moral compass was made by like Calvin and Hobbes, Boy Meets World, and like the Peanuts or something. Like I feel like that's what shaped my worldview, and I started thinking about that with like my kids. And I'm like, oh, what are they taking in? And what are the stories that are shaping their worldview? But did you connect with stories at a young age? Were you a TV kid? Were you a comic kid? What kind of media did you like growing up?
As far as I can remember, one of the first shows that I grew up watching was Powerpuff Girls and Dexter's Laboratory. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, but also I would say that something that has shaped like the way that I create art today is Pokemon.
That's awesome.
A huge one. Yeah, and you know, I've touched on this a little bit, but just having like a Nintendo DS, like a Game Boy, like when I was a kid, really you know, made a lot of like connections for me as far as like what I wanted to create and like being more fictional and playful with my art. How important that was, like versus, I don't know, just creating like more realistic drawings or really, I'm kind of rambling, but
this is great.
That feeling like I was honing in on something that I felt very passionate about. So yeah, I would say like my mom read me a lot of stories when I was a kid, but the things that got me really excited were mostly picture books or more visual things. When I was like very young, I struggled in school a lot, like as a kid. And I remember like getting, you know, in quotes, diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. And at that point, like it was really hard for me to like kind of listen in a class for longer than 15 minutes, because having somebody talk to me versus me seeing something, you know, was not really something that was possible to, how do I put this? When a teacher is talking to you versus you watching something or seeing something, it didn't resonate with me the same way. So seeing like videos and watching TV shows and seeing picture books just really helped shape my interest in art in general. And it helped me like just think a lot more rather than reading actual words and like reading books and things like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Were you a drawer or a maker from a young age? Like, did you have that that bug from the get-go?
Oh, absolutely. Honestly, like ever since I could, you know, stand as like a toddler, my mom would take me to the grocery store and she would mention that I would scream and point at colors. Like, you know, anytime we'd see like stuffed animals like on a shelf in a grocery store. I would just like immediately grab for stuff like that. So anything that had, again, like a cartoonish face or was like bright and colorful, yeah. Just stoked about it. Same with crayons awesome. And painting and anything like creative wise. It was just something that was built into me.
Absolutely. Did that go through school? Like, were you the drawer in your class? Were you the kid that was always doodling and stuff and using it for distraction and social mobility?
Yeah, actually. Like kind of touching on like the whole attention deficit thing again, it was like, yeah, like I couldn't focus properly when somebody was directly talking to like a class or me in a group. But the minute that you gave me a pen and we had like note taking like part of our class, I would just immediately grab for like any part of the paper that was blank. I would just fill it up with drawings. And I remember I'd constantly just get in trouble with my teacher, get held aside at the end of class for doing stuff like that, when personally, like that was how I focused better. So, yeah, I was the drawer.
I think we did such a disservice calling things like ADD, attention deficit disorder. Like, you don't have an attention deficit disorder. You have like a visual attention, advantage. Like, you just, your attention is held in a different way. And we do this thing where, and I think language is really important and how we refer to things like affects a lot of stuff, like in a very weird way and a very physical way. And I think calling things like, you know, ADD a disorder, it's like kids, I feel like this is kind of getting more accepted and more conventional as far as like not looking at everybody's as having these different learning disabilities or disorders, but being like, okay, we all just learn really, really differently and we have very different markers for how we get to different places. And like this batch, like very industrial, like we make workers school system needs to be more flexible than it currently is. And we're really lucky to have Teddy in a public Montessori school, and they definitely, they tend to work more with your kid's learning style. And he has like a speech delay and articulation delay. And like, it's, he's like made so much progress through his first year of school, but the way it was so different from my experience. I had I wasn't ADD. I had spatial disorders and dyslexia and all kinds of other stuff, but it was the same thing where it's like my brain worked fine. It was just, they told me it didn't work like the other kids in my class. And that was a deficit, where it's like, no, it's actually, if you look at it right, it's an advantage.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's such a beautiful way of putting it. I try to advocate like as a person like, you know, who I've made like an entire business for myself and I've been able to make art for a living. I really want to be a voice for younger people who feel stuck, especially in the school system, just because they've been, yeah, you know, in quotes, diagnosed with this disorder or a deficit. You know, it just only means that like you might need a little bit more help or just one-on-one time with somebody to be able to like to work something out as far as like math, reading, science, or anything. And yeah. I was fortunate to get to have extra additional help. I had what was called like an IEP in school, which basically protected me from teachers failing me and all of that. And I also just had like and aides that were able to do one-on-one work with me, but also embrace that I was a visual learner and all that I wanted to do was draw, but of course, you know, needed to still learn. So it was successful, but yeah, just to say the least, like it was a struggle, like being a young kid and being misunderstood by teachers, but it was also really cool getting to like come out of high school, like not have to go the route of college and just feel really empowered to be like an alternative learner and find what worked best with me. And for me, like that was just literally like going on YouTube, like learning that way and like going out into my community and talking to my friends about like my experiences and my goals in life and not feeling as alienated as I was like in the structure of a school system.
Yeah, that's so beautiful and very important for people to hear, because it's funny, like here's a little bit of my privilege. I, you know, went to a Catholic school, a private school, high school, and I was diagnosed with all the things, dyslexia, facial disorder, all of numeric dyslexia, a whole bunch of stuff. And essentially they were like, okay, you're not going to be able to take certain classes. And what they ended up doing was giving me, they allowed me to take art classes to fulfill the credits instead of like the Spanish was one. They let me try like a half semester of Spanish. And they're like, you know what? Even though language like is part of the graduation criteria, we're just going to let you be the art director of the school literary magazine. And that will, you know, suffice for your, so like they worked it around to where I got to do more art stuff. And I was very grateful for that, because I didn't, you know, I didn't have to beat my head against the wall and do stuff that wasn't going to work eventually and like not matter in the long run. And they, so like, but again, that was like very, but it's, you know, I went from there to art school for 2 years because, you know, my parents paid for private school. You're going to college for something. So I proudly have an associate's degree in illustration, which, you know, I guess technically I'm a success story as far as that goes. But it's weird to think about how disconnected like getting that degree is to what I do now. Like it was, there was, you know, 13 years in between before I got to do stuff professionally and a bunch of weird things. And I don't, it's a very different world that I live in now than when I got that degree. But I recently got asked, I was awarded the honorary or distinguished alumni thing from my, from the art school. And I got to go back and like see kids that were graduating from art school today. And they were asking, you know, how do you do this? And what you just said is what I told them. I was like, look, it doesn't, it's cool that you're doing this. And if you want to go on for another 2 years of school, that's awesome. But what means more than anything is finding how best, you know, to work for you and to get out in your community, like be a nice person and go make friends, because that's going to get you farther than any degree or anything else. Like the way that I got Brandywine was involvement in local community and like my, well, not my spouse, my partner, my wife now, like she was involved in the company and I was in a position where I could offer and make this pitch. And like, it's all about, you know, that interaction as much as I learned early on, I was never going to be the best draftsman or the most like, you know, technical skilled artist. But if you're nice and you just keep doing it, that's going to get you way farther than anything else.
Oh my God. Exactly. And you know, that's just, that's exactly my moral in life, is just to be you and to not worry about like the things that you can't do. It's about the things that you can do and are, you know, passionate about. And yeah, I mean, that's just so cool that you spent time like talking to students about that as well. Like I try to donate like my time and efforts as much as possible to talking to kids and anybody who's just like curious about the process, you know, because I really did make it up from ground zero. And yeah, I mean, my mom was my biggest advocate growing up. Like if it weren't for her, I don't think that I would have even graduated high school. Not because of, yeah, not even because of dropping out, just because like I had teachers who were out to get me, honestly. I mean, that sounds so intense to say, but yeah, truly, like I tried so hard to understand the curriculum. But you know, it obviously all added up to not really mean anything in the big picture, just because I've found what does work for me and what makes me happy. And now that I have so many friends that have similar stories and are also, you know, successful artists and have also made their own life, like in their creativity, it's just really cool getting to share those stories and again, not feel so alone, but also be able to build off of each other and inspire each other that way.
Absolutely. I want to ask you what the moment was that, you know, that you saw that you're like, maybe I can do this. Like I'm always interested with creatives, like where that moment was that where they're like, you know what? I got this. Like I can, I think I can. And I know it's a series of stuff usually, but before, the one thing I wanted to share that I thought was, I haven't talked to anybody, another working creative since I did this graduation thing. But one of the things that was interesting to me, like when I graduated from art school, there was I was in the illustration major, and I'd say 80% of my class was graphic design, because in 2006, if you're like getting an art degree, like a safe creative job, you get graphic design degree. This year, there was two like individual students that got a graphic design degree. Everybody else was in animation. And I was like, whoa, that's wild. That says something to me. And I don't know what it is yet, but that I just wanted to share that because I feel like that that's indicative of this next generation that's coming up, that's kind of like betting more on themselves. Like they seem to be like more than ever that, like, you know, I'm gonna make it in some weird way that I don't know what it is yet.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, again, like that says so much to me, just because I went the route of literally just talking to people, sending random messages to people on Instagram that, you know, either they followed me or they didn't, but they were always like so generous with like getting back to me. But yeah, I mean, just on the note of like the two graphic designers that graduated, I mean, sometimes like a classroom environment works better for people as far as learning. For me, I mean, I was kind of, I don't want to say rebellious, but I just wanted to challenge the people who told me that I couldn't accomplish these things like by myself, that I had to, you know, like earn a degree and, you know, work really hard in college in many other department type things. Or I mean, I take like English classes, go to lectures, things like that to be successful. And what I believe is, you know, like things like YouTube, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, like all of these outlets are free and available to anybody without even making an account. And that's so crazy to even think about, but it's really like telling of the times and using like these outlets as our tools rather than against ourselves, you know, as in becoming obsessed with like TikTok and Instagram and Twitter and all of those things. It's like using them as creative tools and being able to work from like square one to becoming really skilled at something.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I'd say, you know, you just hit on something I've been thinking a lot about, because I feel like they're like the way that what you just said as far as using social media and these things as our tools for creative expression and not letting them kind of use us and falling into the traps that are very easy to fall into with them, I think is really indicative of just how new of a technology all of this stuff is. It reminds me, I'm a big Marshall McLuhan fan as far as like media theory stuff goes, and he has this famous rap about essentially like a new media just pretends to be the old media for X amount of time until it can figure out how to be itself. So if you look at like when TV came into existence, the first like decade or so of TV was just stage plays being filmed on camera, and it wasn't until like Lucille Ball and the three cameras that were and the swing sets that were introduced there that TV started to find its own voice and started to find its own way as a medium. And I feel like social media forever, we've just been using it in a very almost, or the internet, I guess, in a bigger sense. And this is something that this dude I really like, Douglas Rushkoff, talks about, that we've been using it in this very, like, you know, less interactive way than it needs to be used. And we've been using it wrong, essentially, because it's a media that's still in its infancy. And we're just starting to see what the proper way to use all of these things are and how, you know, I think there's something to that and what you just said as far as like interacting with these things with intention and purpose.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, being able to, you know, ask a magic genie in a bottle any question and, you know, get an array of answers. It's like such a, I mean, it's crazy, like being in this time. But yeah, really like being able to like formulate our own ideas and our own creative endeavors like is so important. And I think that I see like a lot of people in this generation almost like falling to the trends and the things that we see that like other people are doing that, you know, makes them seem, you know, better than you essentially. When, you know, you really can become like your own person still and still share things on the internet that are very unique. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just so much that you can do with the internet. And yeah, it's like definitely in its infancy, but there's so much beauty to it where I think like people just haven't unlocked those doors quite yet still. There's just a lot more to discover.
We're it's a bunch, it's stuff that, like, it's so funny because it's just like a reflective system. It's, it makes sense with how it is churning out in this capitalist way and everything, but eventually hopefully it's going to break past that and be the cool thing, like the cool art project that it could be or like should be and all of that. But it, I want to get back to the question that I brought up a second ago, if that's cool. Like, where was the time where you're like, oh, feel like I can do this now. Like, I feel like I can support myself. I can admit you just made a big move recently to LA. Like, where was that turning point for you? Like, was there any specific time where you felt that?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound funny just because this was a time of, you know, like craziness and unknown and all of that. But 2020 was around the year that this happened. But I won the PBR like art can contest in 2021, and at that point, like, I had so many cool projects like in the works with companies, creatives, small businesses of all types, and the ball was just rolling for me. And it was just really cool having that as kind of like the cherry on top of that otherwise like really bad year like that was happening in the world. And yeah, I mean, it helped jumpstart my creativity, like, of being a full-time creative. I was actually working in a coffee shop at the time, and my boss, was really supportive of like my art endeavors and helped me like anytime like that I had something going on or I had a really cool idea, like he was just there to support it. So that just further kind of jumpstarted, the excitement of like the turning point and being able to feel more confident in becoming like a full-time creative.
That's awesome. I love that. Which coffee shop was that? Is that how you first came across Brandywine?
Well, I've been a coffee connoisseur for, I want to say like 6 or 7 years now, like pretty much after I left high school, like I started getting into coffee. But no, I worked for a little coffee shop called Push and Pour. And this is back in Boise. They now have 3 locations, but I've been friends with the three people that started Push and Pour back in, holy shit, I think they started in 2017. Oh, they're going to come for me now. Yeah, I knew them before I worked for them. And Lucas, Brennan, and Colin were just some of the best people ever and have always like just supported like my art shows, any sorts of like collaborations with t-shirts, things like that. And then I eventually started working for them in 2019, and that was just really cool kind of like addition. But I found out about Brandywine because my friends at Slow by Slow Coffee in Boise were carrying your bags, and that was one of the first introductions to your art that I saw. And from there, I think I saw like your Instagram handle on one of the bags, and it was history from there.
That's so nice. I'm so grateful for Brandywine. And I mean, it's the first time like I've ever had any kind of recognition or anything that I've like, it's how people know me now. And it's nice. Like it's been really funny to see, like, it's so far away and I'm like, my little coffee bags made it all the way out there. And then I got to connect with one of my favorite, you are by far one of my favorite working artists out there. So it's really funny how coffee, and I love how coffee and these little communities do support creativity in very special ways. And I think it just comes from, like, you know, people that grow up in the same, like, whether it's a DIY culture and then open a coffee shop. There seems to be a symbiotic thing going on there. I guess I've been in the coffee industry for 10 years. If I'm extra rambly, it's because I just had a huge coffee tasting this morning too. We had like 9 new coffees we just tasted. I still get to go drink all the new coffees and do that with Brandywine once a week or so.
That is so cool. Well, I mean, it's the best coffee in the whole world, I do have to say.
too kind, too kind. I still have your bag behind me. I'm gonna reignite the artist series. It was my excuse to talk to folks like yourself and be like, hey, I want new people and make new people to make Brandywine bags. And I had a budget for it, and I was like, this is gonna be a great way to just connect with other creatives I always wanted to talk to too. Because sometimes I still feel weird just messaging people and being like, hey, I like your work, but I always feel better if I'm like, hey, I like your work, and I want to pay you for a job. I feel a little less, I don't know why, I always feel better when I have that to back it up with.
Oh, totally. But I mean, for me, like, I had already been such a fan of what, you know, Brandywine had created with their company, but also, I mean, I've just been a huge fan of your work as well. And, you know, just to say the least, I mean, your work has inspired so much of my, like, creativity and, like, inspiration for just making, like, more, like, fluid art that just, like, has a lot of, like, silliness and happiness to it, just, like, upon, like, staring at it. So, I mean, really, like, your art just fits so perfectly with everything that Brandywine does. And, yeah, sorry, that was a ramble. But
no, that is too kind, too kind. Yeah. Thank you. That means a lot to me. There's it's one of those things that I don't think any artist is good at receiving compliments in certain ways, but I've been trying to get way better at it because I feel like we all can do good with just reminding, we do good things. Like it's so weird, like, feeling stressed out about the job I have, or like when like I start thinking more exterior, like if I'm like, oh, this is a really cool thing, and then like it's awesome that people know me from Brandywine, and now I have to think about how the two things, like if I start thinking too much about it all, it doesn't work. And so it's nice to hear those things and then just be like, okay, we work hard, we can move on.
I know, right? I mean, sometimes we can just get so caught up in the moment, like you're saying, and you know, things can feel so overwhelming, but just the niceness of like a friend reaching out and just saying something, like, or expressing gratitude, just means the world. And for that, like, when you reached out to me for the artist collaboration with Brandywine, I was in total shock and honestly, like, almost fell over. I remember I was at work one day and I got your email. I had just always wanted to see my artwork, like, on a coffee bag. I hadn't done that at that point, and so that was just like such a cool experience, not only working with one of my favorite coffee brands, but just being able to see my art in that format. So it's really special that that's something that you've jump-started and want to continue.
Yeah, we're gonna get back to it this year. We just moved into like a big warehouse facility, and we outgrew the cafe space we were in the back of a couple years ago, but finally made the big move this year. So it's been a bunch of restructuring and figuring out all stuff I'm not really that involved in. When Brandywine started, like, I started it with my at then partner and now wife and the owner of local coffee shops, and I was essentially, I pitched them to run the whole brand, and I was like, I want to screen print the bags. And they were like, sure. But like, I was the one that had to make it work. I had to go sell it. So I was in there like roasting coffee and bagging coffee and running the screen printing and building the wholesale and doing the marketing and the Instagram, doing it all until the brand, like 5 years in, got to the point where we needed to hire a lot of people. And I got to refocus on just doing the drawing. And like, again, that's one of those things when I was talking to those kids that were graduating from college, I was like, listen, you got to be willing to do some other stuff sometimes. Like, I was bagging and roasting coffee for the first 4 years of Brandywine, as well as drawing all the bags. And because I knew the brand would work, and I had never had that chance to be like, here's a whole brand. So I was like, I'm going to make this work. And luckily now I'm at the point where I don't have to do any of that stuff. I just get to draw the bags. I still have some like wholesale customers because they're like friends at this point and stuff. So it's just, but essentially, besides drinking the coffee and helping kind of set some releases in the overall market, like, I just get to draw coffee bags. But it, you know, it's weird how you get to places, for sure.
Yeah, like, isn't it so gratifying, like, just watching something blossom after just putting so much time and energy into, you know, something that you love. But also having other people on your team to pick up some of those other otherwise tedious things that you were probably handling that weren't so artsy in the beginning.
No, for sure. It's very nice to have a solid team. But yeah, so one of the other things that I wanted to jump back to real quick, and I realized that we have brought up the alter egos a few times, but could you give a little background of how you landed on the whole idea, like the design, the whole alter ego, like how you decided that this is going to represent, like what it represents, I guess, or the whatever you want to say as far as the backstory of it.
Right. I mean, you know, it's funny because I get this question a lot and I feel like the answers always are kind of like ever changing to me. But I guess the shortcut way of saying it is that the characters like were first drawn in many different versions. And this like was all during like my 365 drawing a day project that I was making for myself. And just as a side note, my 365 project, the definition of that to me was that I was going to draw something new every single day in the hopes of teaching myself how to draw digitally and learn other mediums as well. And then also just kind of like build a portfolio for myself so I could shop myself around to different companies or, you know, whatever I was interested in working on, just having something to share. So yeah, the alter ego character had a lot of different looks to itself in the beginning. They never had the name. And it's funny because my mom actually was the one that came up with the name alter ego. So they could have been nameless to this day if it weren't for her. yeah.
That's
so
in beautiful. The,
yeah, no, it's shout out Susan. Shout out Mama Dreyfus. She's amazing and is literally my business partner at this point.
But, I was going to say, it's still a big part of your whole brand and everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If you ever order stuff from my website, she's the one that packs it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she's awesome. But yeah, so alter egos. Okay. At first, when if I could show you visually, I could. The characters used to have like multiple bumps or some might say hair on top of their head. I kind of work in like threes, I've noticed. So like you can see that there's three bumps on their head. They have four fingers. They have three bumps for their nose. And a lot of like my other characters kind of have that attribute as well. But yeah, I guess like the definition of an alter ego. I'm like, where do I even start? They are just these kind of like rambunctious and cute and happy characters that bounce around, and they kind of live in this world where there's no judgment towards each other. They all kind of look the same because that's how we should all feel on the inside, is that we all should view each other equally. And yeah, they just love drinking coffee, hanging out with their tree and mushroom friends. And
I love it.
Sometimes they ride bikes. Sometimes you even see them in cars. And sometimes you might see them riding dragons too. And that's pretty cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. I am all about the dragon life. That's awesome. There's something to the way that you draw the forms that is so organic. Like it just looks like it feels right when you put the pen to paper or whatever the medium is. It feels like it's very, and it reminds me of these. Have you ever looked at like early like 1920s comic strips from like both like Little Nemo's, probably Little Nemo and Slumberland's probably the really big one by this dude Winsor McKay, but like the forms, the body forms have a very similar flow to yours that is just this organic expressive thing. And I think it's really, there's something really special about the way that they interact with the architecture that you make. Like I love the different types of houses you build and the different, I guess I keep using the word lived in, but it feels very lived in. It feels like a real place. And that's always my favorite, like of any artist or cartoonist out there, when they can build a world that you feel like you could like open a door and be like, oh, I'm here now. I can walk around. I know how they would draw a bag of chips, or I know how they would draw a remote control, or you know what I mean? Like that's like to me something. And maybe I'm too close to my own world, but like I never feel like I have that consistent world that you can just like walk into. And I'm always like a little jealous, but always very much like, oh, that's what I aspire to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about just like never holding yourself back and just drawing things when you're excited in the moment. Like I constantly have a sketchbook in my bag whenever I'm like out in public or just anywhere, even at like a coffee shop, and I see like a weird bird or something, I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. Like, let's draw it this way. But, you know, really, like, I guess it's just come natural to me that I love like drawing things out of place and kind of building on top of that. So like kind of with the buildings and stuff too. I've been obsessed with drawing like castles recently, and I love like playing around with like the tops of how like a castle would look, and maybe adding like texture or patterns to things like these structures, or even, you know, putting animals sitting on top of them or something, like just making it seem a lot more crazy and unusual than, again, like how you would maybe imagine it in a real world.
I love it. That's beautiful. Yeah, that's so nice. Do you have a go-to thing that you're consuming when you're creating stuff these days? Like, do you have a listening regimen, or are you a silent creator? What's your go-to when you're making stuff?
I have to have music on at all times. Honestly, that's awesome. The one thing that like matters the most when I'm making art is that there's good music playing. Yes. Sometimes if I'm with friends and they're being a little too chatty, I have to put in my headphones to be able to like really zone into what I'm doing. But yeah, honestly, music is a huge inspiration for my work. I would say that the album that has shaped like almost 90% of the world that I've made today is like Tame Impala's Currents. Just listening to that album, like literally takes me to a different planet, and it feels as if I'm creating like my world, like whenever I listen to each song, like every little scene just comes so naturally to me, like when I'm drawing to like, yeah, just that album in particular, but also just psychedelic rock in general is something that really drives my creativity.
That's awesome. I love those auditory experiences where you can almost get an idea of like what synesthesia would be like, where you can like feel other senses via, like, you know, you hear colors and things like that. Like it's a very weird experience that seems to be so specific to the world of music that I love. Like I think that's really fun. Do you have have you ever played music? Do you have any kind of musical background?
Well, besides like taking choir when I was like younger, like through like mid high school, I've never played an instrument. I've been curious. My boyfriend like used to play drums in a band and stuff, and you know, it's cool to watch other people do that and go to concerts, but I honestly, I'm not sure if it's for me. I think
that's
like
fair.
Yeah, like using my hands to create, like painting murals and, you know, drawing and all of that is almost like my own instrument.
That's very fair. As far as using your hands to make different things at this point, is there any medium or anything that you're really into working with right now? Like, I know you like to do woodcuts and giant murals and canvases and lots of digital stuff. Like, is there anything that you've been really digging these days?
Actually, I'm so glad you brought that up, because last week I feel like I just opened or reopened a door again. I love working with like modeling clay and other sorts of crafty things like foam paper and felt. I had a friend who just did a really cool Pinewood Derby race. This was in LA. Yes. And he had like, it was a no rules Pinewood Derby. So people showed up with all sorts of wacky cars that they had made. If you're unfamiliar, this is a race that, like, I guess Boy Scouts used to do, like, you know, when you're a kid. And yeah, my friend just decided that it would be like a cool idea for his album release to have like a whole derby and have people show up with just literally whatever their mind could think of, like as a car. And I made this really cool car out of modeling clay. My friend helped me make like these little wood cutouts. So there's a little tree. I'm completely freaking out right now. But yeah, you get the idea. It was just very like out of the zone of like what I've been working in every other way recently. And I think it's really good to like get yourself out of like a digital headspace. To be able to get your hands like dirty and,
be open to the idea of, like, you know, not failing, but just making things and not having them turn out the way you expect them to, and then just moving on from there.
Absolutely. That's so beautiful. I loved when you posted that. I saw a whole bunch of people's and they all looked amazing, and I loved yours. And that was, I had that, one of the few things I had written down to ask you about was that car. So that's perfect that came up. And I agree, like, there is something so nice to, like, and to completely switch it up and go to making, like, you know, something that's very 3D and getting out of that 2D world. It does something to your brain where it's like, oh yeah, I'm connecting to the same thing, but in a whole different tactile way. And it just kind of ignites the creativity for everything else. And that's so cool. I got into puppet making with the kids for a little bit because they got really into the Muppets. And I was like, we can make our own, guys. Like, we can do this. It's not that hard. So I have, like, some very creepy, weird looking puppets. And then I have some that I, like, really, like, we still play with. And, like, but I have them all, like, out here because my kids don't like them to, like, be in the house when they're not being played with. Like, they're, like, they're, like, freaked out by them for certain ones. So I have them all about here. I look back and I'm like, yeah, I probably spent more time making those puppets than, like, most of the drawings I did that month. But man, that's really fun to have that, and no one will ever see them. And it was a nice break from just sitting at the drawing table and everything.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny you mentioned puppets. I have some friends who actually invited, like, a couple of us to come to their studio and make puppets one day, and it was such a fun experience, just being able to not care about, like, making your signature character, like, getting to play with fabrics and making eyeballs and learning how to sew things properly. Like, it was just so amazing. You should definitely check them out. Their name is Ragmop and Goose, and they cool, and they make the most amazing characters. They even have, like, adoption days with their puppets. It's just, it's a whole thing. It's amazing.
That's amazing. I'm going to have to check that out. That sounds right up my alley these days. There's something too, like, going back to being a beginner at something too, like, not knowing what you're doing and remembering how to, like, fumble through stuff. Like, I feel like, you know, hitting those level up points as, like, a 2D artist come a lot longer for me. Like, they're still there. Like, that's one of the nice parts about making any kind of art, is you never, like, master it all the way. There's always, like, those kind of really nice level ups where, like, oh, I couldn't do that a couple months ago. But I feel like those come slower for me now because of, like, the way I work and the things I work on. The, like, Brandywine still does 2 coffee releases a week, so I'm responsible for 2 finished pieces of artwork a week all year long, and they have to be ready for silk screening and all that. So, like, I've learned to be less precious with things, but at the same time, I feel like that's slowed down some of the, like, those kind of little craft level ups that you get along the way. But it's nice to go back to a completely different medium and, like, feel those, like, really quick, like, oh, that's how you sew that so no one can see it, or that's where you glue the eyeball so that it makes that little wiggly thing right. Like, those little things feel real good.
Exactly. Yeah, just going back to the basics and throwing any other, like, knowledge or care, like, out the window and just enjoying yourself for the pure joy of fun.
Yeah. So now that you're in a new studio, is this something you're going to play with more as far as doing more 3D fun stuff? Because that would be really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I currently live in a 600 square foot studio apartment with my boyfriend, and, you know, we love it. We're doing amazing, and we're so thankful to be in LA. But let's just say, for the creative aspect of things, I am so used to, you know, getting really, like, messy and, like, you know, get my hands dirty, get paint everywhere, and then leave that mess for, you know, like, the next month or something, right?
Yeah.
You can't do that in this apartment. So, yeah, having the studio just enables so much more fun and exploration, and especially being able to work on larger canvases at all times, being able to share more content in that way, and, yeah, just having more opportunity.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So, before we started recording, you mentioned that you have a nice new morning routine that involves a walk and kind of connecting to nature. Is that something that you've been like, I'm always fascinated with people's morning routines. Have you always had kind of like an intentional morning routine when you could, or is this a new thing that you've been working on? Could you talk a little bit about what you like to do to get your day going?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, before I moved to LA, like, really my only morning routine was that, like, I co-rented with my mom, and so we have three cats, and so we would both essentially wake up at the same time. We would immediately grab our coffee, and we have like a front room like in the house in Idaho, and we would just sit there with the door wide open, and the cats would be coming in and out, would drink coffee, and I would usually work on my daily drawing for my post that day. And that was essentially like my routine there. But now recently, being in Los Angeles, I live in an area where there's a lot more like mountains and nature. And I'm super grateful for that because I also live 10 minutes away from like the actual city. So I can kind of be anywhere all at once. But every day, I love to wake up really early. And so I will just literally get my coffee, throw on some like tennis shoes, and go on like a mile long walk, and get to listen to the birds and nature, see some neighbors sometimes, but most importantly, just kind of get to disconnect from any sorts of like stressors or things that like I have like going on in my professional life that otherwise are stopping me from like thinking like a real human being. Probably for like half an hour, just kind of do nothing. And it's really nice to like be up that early in the morning, not have to worry about getting like an email, and then eventually, you know, come home and start either working on like a personal drawing, sketching in my sketchbook, listening to music. And then eventually like picking up whatever work is going on that day and kind of going from there.
That's awesome. That's so perfect. There's something really special about that morning time when you can really disconnect. And like, that's still like when I had kids, I flipped my schedule to where I started getting up at 4:30 in the morning so I could have like 2 solid hours or so before the kids got up. And that's where I did the majority of my drawing and like all of that stuff. And recently the kids started getting up earlier for some reason. And I've lost a big chunk of that like morning time. And for a while I was cutting out that like do nothing time. I was like, well, I guess I'm going to wake up. I'm just going to start work. I'll get the coffee and I'll start working right away because the kids are going to be up soon. And then recently I'm like, I'm feeling really burnout. Oh yeah. I kind of cut out my do nothing time. The only do nothing time I had all day, that like half hour at like 4:30 to 5 in the morning. And I was like, I guess I should start doing that again instead of the drawing in the morning. And like for a while, I haven't even talked about this, but for a while, part of this podcast for the last year was doing a daily art episode where every day that I posted a drawing on Instagram, I would record a 5-minute episode kind of talking about what I was thinking about or some stupid shit that happened. But essentially, I would wake up, I would do the drawing, and then I would record the 5-minute episode and post it all and whatnot. And then the kids would get up. And then like since Teddy started getting up later, I was like, well, I can't do all of this in the morning. So for a while, I was just doing the drawing and the podcast. And then I just stopped doing the daily podcast because it was just not as fulfilling as it was for the first big chunk. And like, I was feeling like I needed to reclaim that do nothing time. And it was either cut the drawing or cut the podcast. And obviously the podcast is going to get cut because the drawing can't get cut. So I'm going to do the interview episodes that I do every week, which this is going to be coming out for on Saturday, but I'm going to be not doing the daily podcast anymore. Cause I want that. Like, I want to be able to do nothing for a half hour every morning.
Absolutely. I mean, you should definitely give yourself that clarity or just being able to, yeah, do nothing. I myself, this was last year, I made the joint decision to not pursue like another 365 project. And it was honestly so crazy and like to kind of do that, just to kind of let go in that way, because, before that, like I had accomplished like, oh my God. Okay. Let me do some quick mental math here. So I had done over 4 years of my 365 project consistently up until last year. And that was, you know, like the best time of my life. And then I realized like that it was kind of harming my creative process because I was devoting time to like stressing over what I was going to make that day versus it's time to draw and I have time to draw. And then it turned into I have to draw. And if I don't post by this time, the algorithm isn't going to catch it. So, yeah, I kind of found more value in creating when it felt right, but also like devoting time to like make art, but not necessarily having to share it with the world at all times. So that was also a part of like my routine that I kind of reclaimed recently.
That's beautiful and makes so much sense. And like was, and I, it's so funny. There's this guy I really like named Mitch Horowitz, and I've been lucky enough to like talk to him, and he's written a bunch of books that have done a lot for me as far as like just overcoming different things and whatnot. And one of the things he talks about a lot is how we will tell ourselves these stories that like, if I stop doing this, you know, daily podcast or this 365 project, then like people are going to stop caring about my artwork. The like financial opportunities are going to become less and like all of this stuff. But then when you actually stop that thing and you realize that like, no, it's time to stop it. Outcomes be damned, then the outcomes are never that thing you built up in your brain. Like the work never stops coming. People don't stop liking your work. Like it ends up being better, but we have this thing where we're like, no, we have to do it. And like, it has to be this way or else people aren't going to care about us anymore. And like, it's, did you have that before you made the decision to stop doing the 365 this year?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, honestly, like Instagram was starting to fail far as like, you know, getting the views and like people seeing your stuff like regularly, as opposed to like 2020 was the year of like everybody was seeing stuff on like the Explore page and it was all working out in a consistent way. Not that that matters, of course, creating artists for yourself specifically and, you know, the people who enjoy it, like that's secondary. But yeah, I was definitely having this sort of identity crisis where I was like, if I'm not drawing every single day at this specific time, then when will I make time for myself? And is this going to still look the same way structurally? And it did, you know, it's like kind of, it's like pressing a button and wondering if like, you know, something's going to explode, and then you wait and nothing happens and everything's fine. It's all in your head. It's kind of like that. Yeah.
Yep. No, I think that's so important for people to hear, because the outcomes are never as bad as you think they're going to be. Like people feel like leaving situations, whether it's like a job or a relationship or even like, you know, a in-law that's really annoying. Like you can leave situations at any time and it's usually not as bad as you're working it out to be in your head. And I think that's really important. And I, it's funny because I've learned that lesson like 30 times in my life, I feel like, but it's still, it's nice. Nice to be hit over the head with it sometimes. And yeah, this is the first, I think the fourth day I have not done the podcast. I'm like, oh, this feels great actually. Like it's nice like to not have something kind of like hanging over your head. And like it's funny because I never even thought about that, but creating for the algorithm's time, for like having be like, okay, the post does best at this time, so I have to have my illustration, like it's so silly, and like it's something that so many people, myself included, do. And like it's so funny how that like the what actually guides what, when and where we create and stuff, and remembering that you can take a hold and like not have to be dictated by that stuff is very important.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I constantly have these conversations with other creators. I mean, you know, it's funny to say that, you know, like, oh, like, you know, fuck the system. Like, you know, Instagram sucks and all of that. But like 99% of my friends at this point were people that I've met off the internet and are now like people that live around the corner from me in LA. So, yeah, you know, yeah. I am so thankful that I am able to have like an open conversation with people constantly about like how we're feeling about changes and the algorithm and just the internet and trends and things like that. And, you know, feel as if there's more control over less and it's not as overwhelming and crazy as it seems. And like that we're not alone. Like if we're,
you know, like either losing followers, not getting as much exposure, or even like getting reached out to by certain opportunities as well. You know, it's all ebbs and flows, but you just got to stay optimistic.
Yeah, no, that's super important to keep in mind for sure. I'm constantly fascinated with the way that culture kind of moves these days, and with the way that creatives, I feel like it is such a, you know, important time for creatives to really be doing the thing. Like, it's never these really big shake 'em up novelty injections are always such a fertile ground for artists and such. So like, I'm always super excited to see what comes next and what comes out of all of everything, but it is a weird transition time. And yeah, culture in general is just such an odd thing to think about. And I'm also just like tapped out now, like I'm almost 40 and like I don't know what the hell's going on these days. My kid's super into Minecraft. That's what I know about right now. You have questions about Minecraft, I got you.
Oh yeah, no, I feel that. I'm like that with Zelda at this point. It's like Zelda and Pokemon are just like, yep, things that are super like in the forefront of my mind if I'm not thinking about art or something.
So my friend, I have a really good friend who's he's a really great like thinker and just kind of, I don't know what he would call himself at this point, but he's a podcaster and he's like in the paranormal world and stuff, and Pokemon mean a lot to him. And he's talked to me a lot about how much weirdness there is in the world of Pokemon and how like a lot of, there's just so much esoteric and just very mystical thinking that's been imbued from the very beginning of the creation of that whole property. That's super interesting to me. And I can't really go into it more than that because I would do it this disjustice, or I would not do it justice, and Vuk would be mad at me. But I love that that's such an inspiration point for you.
Yeah, I mean, even like some of the names of Pokemon are like super funny to me. It sounds silly, but recently I found out that Ekans is snake backwards.
I had no clue.
Right? Whoa. There's just little tidbits like that that really...
You just blew my mind.
Things that I just like overlooked when I was a kid or even up to this point. You know, you see things and you don't think much about them. So
totally.
Yeah. But awesome. I mean, yeah, even like the thought of like legendary Pokemon like have always fascinated me. But yeah, that's an entire can of worms to open. But I'm constantly just so like fascinated by the world of Pokemon and yeah, like all the lore and like fantasy that it provides for like our minds.
Totally. So we're at about an hour here, so we'll start wrapping up if that is all good. But on that topic real quick before we say goodbye, were you into weird stuff growing up? Like, were you a spooky kid at all? Did you like ghost stories, or did you have like urban legends or anything fun like that in your hometown?
Oh my god. Wow, that's a great question. So I grew up in a small ski town called Sun Valley, Idaho. And honestly, there weren't many folklores about the town other than, you know, like it was an old mining town as well as like a ski town. So there's definitely some stuff that happened. If anything, when I lived in Boise, there was a over 100 year hotel that was called the Idenha Hotel. And I actually had an art studio in this space for about a year. And I started hearing stories about like things that had happened. This hotel is now converted into an apartment complex and has a hair studio next to where my studio space was. And yeah, so there was a bellboy that apparently got his head chopped off, I think. He died in the elevator, I think. Yeah, so I heard that he still patrols the property. And then there was a woman who died in the hair studio or just in the space where the hair studio is. And I guess she kind of plays with like things sometimes. I myself have personally not like experienced this, but my friends have come into the space and chairs have been knocked over and they've heard like lights turn on and hair dryers even turn on without them being like plugged in. So, yeah, wow. I mean,
that's freaky.
Idaho's got like a lot of old architecture, and so there's definitely a lot to like learn still for myself about like what's there and like all of the history and lore as well.
But yeah, I would be more curious to delve into that now that you've mentioned it, honestly.
No, that's Idaho seems like a weird place. It seems like it would have some really good folklore. It's been something that I've done via this podcast. Is I do on Wednesdays, I do a weird Delaware episode where I pick out something weird. It could be like a lot of it is just weird old, like there's a fountain of youth in lower Delaware that was discovered back in the 1700s, and there's still like a plaque and you can still go to the fountain. So I'll do stuff like that where it's just like weird landmarks, and then I'll do like cryptid cases or monsters or hauntings and things. But there's so much, it's really fun to like dig in locally and be like, man, my little state of Delaware is way weirder than I ever would have thought. And I'm sure it'd be very similar if you dig into things around there.
Oh, 100%. And yeah, like back to what you were saying, like I was a very sensitive kid growing up, and I still feel like I am as an adult. And so I try to like limit my like exposure to, you know, learning about like scary monsters and, you know, like stories of people encountering creatures. Like, I love the idea of it. I just wish that I could like handle it more. Because when I'm laying in the dark in the middle of the night, I think about it too much. But nope. I'm slowly learning more and feeling more comfortable in that realm of things. But I love it when people tell me stories about like experiences they've had, or, you know, friends of friends kind of stuff like that. It's really cool to me.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. That's like, honestly, like I'm the same way. Like, I can't do horror movies. I've never been really good at gory or scary or jump scares or ghost movie. Like, I grew up loving like Goosebumps and like the Treehouse of Horrors Simpsons episodes. And like, that is the realm of spooky that I love. And like all of that stuff. Like, I love the Twilight Zone. I love like old EC comics, like that very science fiction horror twist style things and whatnot. And like when I was about to have Teddy, I started getting into a lot of like, I went through the good existential questions as far as like being like, huh, what do I think about death? And like, what do I think about these big things that like having kids make you think about? And I started getting into like Ram Dass and Terrence McKenna and all of this like, you know, kind of new agey stuff. And I realized that all of them are just like telling ghost stories the whole time. Like Ram Dass, he talks to his disembodied friend Emmanuel. That's where like half of the famous Ram Dass quotes out there, they come from this channeled being called Emmanuel that he would like talk to via this channeler, right? So he's talking to ghosts, and like that's how he's getting some of the most profound insights onto like the nature of the universe. And Terrence McKenna talks to the mushroom spirits. He sets intentions and says, hey, mushroom dudes, what can you tell me about the universe? And then he eats 5 grams of mushrooms and talks to the mushroom spirit. I'm like, oh, he's talking to mushroom ghosts. So that kind of like got me back into the paranormal and weird stuff. And I realized that exactly what you said, that like campfire tale experiencer, like that's the good stuff. Like, it's not the like movie Hollywood. Like, it's fun to talk to the stuff, because when you hear people tell their stories, whether it's a synchronicity story or a ghost story, it's really them telling you about themselves. Like, it's really a reflection of how they see the world. And like, that's just a more fun way of seeing the world to me at this point.
Yeah. And I think that that's like a great way to see things too. And I also think it takes the edge off a little bit versus, yeah, you know, some of these movies exactly. that you see like are cooked up a little bit to be more intense than they actually are. But yeah, I mean, I do believe that there is like a sort of greater power out there, like of paranormal beings and, you know, afterlife and stuff like that. I mean, it's super cool as a concept. I myself would love to like experience a little bit more of that in my life. I got to go to like Area 51 a couple years ago, and that was cool, like getting to go to like Roswell and yes. kind of like hear more of that. Yeah, but I love like the kind of spookiness of that aspect of things.
Yeah, no, okay, well, I could ramble about this stuff for another hour easily, because there's so I besides talking to folks like yourselves that are friends and creatives, the other half of this podcast is just me talking to people that write books about the paranormal and all of this stuff. And there's this whole line of thinking that the paranormal is actually, whether you want to call it Gaia or the universe or God, it's an art project by these other entities, these other beings. And the whole idea is to insert novelty into our lives lives and to make us remember that we're a part of this like giant enchanted tapestry of souls or beings or whatever you want to call it. And I love that. That's where I'm like, oh, that makes like that's something that's special. And I think is a really fun way to tap into that. Like we're all connected and type feeling that you don't normally get from just like thinking about very topic or surface level paranormal UFO stuff. And yeah, but you made me want to ask one thing, because I used to ask this all the time on the podcast, and we'll end with this, but what do you think happens after we die? What do you think about death? Do you have any kind of fun models you like to play with, or have you put any thought into that?
You know, I personally don't know what happens. I hope that like there is something out there, like a place that we might go to where we might get to experience like almost like another life, or maybe like reincarnation would be like a really cool thing. Like I want to believe in reincarnation so much, and like I have so much curiosity for it. I've had cats that have passed away, like, and almost ironically, like one cat passes away, another one comes wandering down the street and suddenly mm-hmm. like befriends you. You know, I believe in stuff like that 100%.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess like my long like answer, short answer to a long question is I believe in like reincarnation, and I think that, you know, people are still around even if they physically like aren't like people on this planet anymore. And same with animals. Yeah.
No, that's beautiful. I definitely love that. I think that's definitely the thing I resonate with most. I love most everybody I talk to has a very there's a thread that reincarnation, and it's cool because it's not like reincarnation in the way you hear about it a lot of the times. You know, Robin Banks. I'm pretty sure. I had him on I had them on a little bit ago, and Robin's take on this was so beautiful. And the way that they put it was essentially that feeling that you get when you're standing barefoot in the grass and you just kind of get overcome with the urge to make something or to just lay there, that's the like reincarnated souls of people around us, that we feel it all the time when we're in nature, and that like the energy and the soul matter, whatever you want to call it, that reincarnates through that creative feeling you get from going out and being like that morning walk you're talking about, or going out and just being a part of the world that we're already a part of. And I had never thought about it like that, but I know that feeling that Robin's talking about, and I was like, that's beautiful. I've never thought about it like that, and that's really impacted me. So I love those little threads that I've picked up on from people and asking this weird question.
Yeah, oh my god, and that's just so beautiful. Yeah, to think about it that way too. I do feel like there are other forces like beyond our world that like that constantly inspire me to make the art that I do. And yeah, like, again, talking about like a can of worms, like I have an entire like family tree of artists in my family that, you know, I wish I had known them more when they were still with us, but it does feel really cool. Like, you know, making sense of like my creativity and like why I'm on this planet and why I'm doing what I'm doing, and not feeling like it's so random.
Yes. That's beautiful. All right. Well, that does. I could ask you a bunch of questions from there, but I feel like I'm going to keep taking. We'll have to do this again sometime, because I feel like we could have a whole nother fun conversation along these lines.
Oh, I would love that. Yes. Let's make sure that this happens again.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do more roundtables too. So it'd be super fun to like have you and Robin or some people that like we kind of are mutually friends with on, and just kind of shoot the shit like this and talk about weird stuff.
Oh my god. Okay, Robin, if you're out there listening, can we please do this soon?
Yeah, we're gonna make it happen. I
love, I think, Robin.
Now, yeah, no, one of my favorite people to talk to for sure. Well, before we go, tell people where to find your work, anything you want to promote or plug right now, and I'll make sure I link everything. And I'll do a proper introduction. I know we just kind of jumped into the recording, but I'll do an intro after all of this, and it'll be coming out Saturday. So if there's any events or anything, it's coming out real quick for you.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, my name is Ashley Dreyfus. My Instagram handle is dreyfus.art. And if you want to shop my merchandise, you can find that at www.dreyfusart.com. And yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you so much to Todd, who is just such a huge inspiration to my art, my life, and you know, just so grateful to have you as a friend, dude. You're awesome.
Oh, well, the feeling is more than mutual. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me and just being such a wonderful person. I am I'm really excited to share this conversation and have another one with you. Yeah, thank you so much, Ashley. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Todd. You too. Bye.